Games Review My Seats podcast for Tuesday, August 5th. I'm your host, John Lord. With me today from GolfNewsNet.com, Ryan Belangi. Okay, Ryan, if you had microdiscectomy surgery, how long do you suppose it would take you to return to the PGA Tour?
Not 90 days. It would take.
Did I pronounce that right? Is it microdiscectomy?
I was going with microdiscectomy, but
discectomy.
I could.
Discectomy. There you go. You got
it. I could say discectomy. I never said it aloud until you just did. So.
Yeah, my way sounds too much like a vasectomy. So we're going to go with microdiscectomy.
Discectomy. Yeah. Microvasectomy also sounds really painful, but, but six months seems reasonable. Maybe as a minimum. Is that be the floor? But it sounded like from when Graham DeLette had a similar surgery, he said it took about a year to get back to where he needed to be. So he came back before then, but at a year it started to feel pretty normal again. So for a guy like DeLette, who up until last year was really more of a grinder, he had to go out and play. Tiger Woods is worth $1 billion and can take all the time off that he needs. Doesn't have to worry about a car, doesn't have to worry about money. All he has to worry about is being throttled for being injured, which I think he can take at this point. So I didn't see the wisdom in playing the Quicken Loans National, then playing the Open Championship, and just going, okay, I know I shouldn't be back, but I'm just going to resume a normal schedule, like everything fine, and then go to Firestone, and you're one awkward stance away, apparently, from blowing out your back. That is too much on the edge for me, and it should be too much on the edge for Tiger for him to even consider playing this week.
Yeah, I've got to mention that you kind of trolled Tiger a bit on Twitter, Sunday. I don't know what your exact words were, but I'm pretty sure you called him something like a tough guy for attempting to come back so soon. And my question to you and all the other people out there who are kind of scoffing at Tiger saying, well, this is what you get. How does it make you feel if you find out that Tiger was told by all of his doctors that, hey, yeah, this is a lot sooner than others have come back, like a Graham DeLette, but you're Tiger Woods, your rehab went splendidly, you're ready to go, you have full doctor's clearance. Would that change your mind at all if that information came out?
No, because he hired Dr. Anthony Galea to help him out, and that guy's spending some time in federal prison. So I don't think Tiger has the best HMO plan because he's not picking really good doctors then in that case. And my fear is that Tiger probably was told by his doctors, you should not be playing golf, just like they told him before the 08 U.S. Open, don't bother playing, that you shouldn't be playing. He kind of heroically said, I'm going to play and I'm going to win. And then he did, because Rocco Mediate is Rocco Mediate, not Phil Mickelson or Adam Scott of 2013 or what have you. So I guess the onus on all this falls on Tiger. It does fall on his doctors to make sure he doesn't play. It falls on Sean Foley to work with Tiger if Tiger insists on playing, to come up with some kind of temporary move that mitigates injury as best as possible until he feels at full strength again. And it's on Tiger to realize, standing awkwardly on the face of a bunker on the second hole of a tournament you have no chance to win to hit a full shot is a bad idea for your back. And all he had to do was turn sideways and hit it left and get on in four instead of three, and he would have saved his season. He wouldn't have hurt his back. And maybe we're talking about the possibility of Tiger playing well this week instead of the possibility of him playing at all.
I have, in general, and this isn't just in reference to you or any of your tweets or anything on Twitter, but I have found the commentary that has followed Tiger Woods' latest injury to be rather patronizing. You know, when people talk about his back, they almost talk as if, well, you know, let me tell you a lesson about bad backs, son. And I'm having a tough time tolerating a lot of the commentary that where people are playing the role of armchair doctors here, and they know what's best for Tiger. And I hear what you're saying about, you know, other, you know, recovery periods, about what it takes for most people to recover from this injury, and that you need to give it more time, and that you hear other golfers talking about how if they had something similar, that they would do the prudent thing, which is, you know, sit out until they were 100% ready. But I'm starting to get a little fed up with people saying, well, Tiger, this is what you need to do, and this is how you need to treat your body. I mean, if there's anyone who knows his body, it's Tiger Woods. And so I've got to imagine that he's been getting advice from doctors. I know you mentioned, you know, Dr. Galea and his track record with people like that, who kind of work within the shadows. But still, I find a lot of the speculation to be a little condescending and patronizing. I wonder if you shared my opinion on that.
And I was probably condescending to Tiger when I said Tiger being a tough guy wanting to come back so soon. I think it resonated with people who were like, why are you doing this? And I think it comes from a place, not, I think from some people it comes from a place of finally getting to say, I told you so, to Tiger. People have been scorned by him or just never a fan of him. But for me, it comes from a place of, what are you doing? You are 38 years old. You're getting closer to 40 every day. Your window to win major championships against Jack Nicklaus's record is closing quickly. He's looking at 7 years, 28 majors between when Jack won his last major and his current age. So that's not a lot of time. And if you're going to spend it on the shelf trying to play piddly tournaments like the one you won 8 times, you don't need to prove to anybody anymore that you can win a Firestone. We got it. You don't have to play Firestone. You don't have to play Memorial. You don't have to play Bay Hill. You don't have to play all those courses that you won 80 bazillion times. All you need to do is play 4 tournaments a year, maybe 5 if you want to make the PGA Tour feel happy and go play the Players. The rest, I don't care about, because this is all that matters. This is the story in golf for 7 years, is can he get there? And if he's on the shelf because he wants to play tough guy and come back from injury probably too soon, despite whatever he feels about his recovery, and he, obviously you're right, he knows his body best, but if he knows his body best, he was wrong. And if he was wrong, then he's got to listen to somebody else. And that somebody else will probably tell him not to play this week, because he has 28 majors ahead of him that he could play in before he turns 46. And before he does that, realistically, he's got to win 4 to 5 of them, because his health is just not good enough compared to Jack's when he was 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, even when Jack was in contention 12 years later to win the 08 Masters, or 98 Masters, sorry, 2 years later, 12 years later from 86. Then, I guess I don't see the wisdom in thinking about now for Tiger, because the plan has gone far enough thinking about now. Now you got to think about the end game, because it's in sight, and you need to preserve your body to be able to have the best chance possible to tie Jack Nicklaus's record. Nothing else matters.
You mentioned Sean Foley earlier, Tiger's swing coach, and I think it was Nick Faldo during CBS telecast of the Bridgestone Invitational who referenced that much of Tiger's problems right now come from his swing, not just the ferocity of his swing, but also his, and this is much more technical than I'm able to understand, but also it has a lot to do with his spine angle, and how the way Sean Foley has him swinging puts a lot of extra pressure on his spine. And so if there is another party that is responsible for Tiger's ongoing back problems, it may very well be his swing coach, Sean Foley.
It may be. And I sent a tweet about that saying whatever they're working on may have contributed to his back injury. And I got a lot of brushback on that. And I think people interpreted my belief that everything they've ever worked on caused this injury. And I'm not so sure I buy Faldo's rationale, because Tiger was perfectly fine playing with Sean Foley's golf swing in 2012 and 2013. And he won 8 times between the two. So it couldn't have been that bad. But what my indictment was, is it is incumbent on Foley and Tiger as the student to say, okay, I have to change my swing. I'm not as mobile. I can't put as much torque on things. I can't have as ferocious of a swing. It's a good word to use. Tiger likes to use the word explosive. That should be out of his vocabulary until sometime next March. There should be no mention of explosion in his golf swing because his body just is not capable of that right now. And it puts too much pressure on his back. He said he can't turn his body as much as he typically does. So that costs him distance, that frustrates him, and that puts him in a position where he's got to play a little bit of a different style of golf, play more like a 45-year-old at 38 than play like a 38-year-old or a 30-year-old at 38, which Tiger tries to do sometimes. So I think that's a teacher-student thing where Sean Foley cannot stop Tiger Woods from trying to play like Tiger Woods, who's perfectly healthy. But he can do his darndest to try and instill in him some mitigating motion that will at least let him get through until he feels perfectly healthy again.
I was talking to a good friend of mine. I was actually playing golf with a good friend of mine last week, and this is somebody who has had serious back issues in the past. He's had to decide whether or not to have spinal fusion surgery. I mean, this is a guy who knows bad backs, and he has managed to play 5 or 6 rounds of golf a week this summer, and he attributes his ability to play so much golf this summer to the fact that he has lost about 15-20 pounds. I look at Tiger, and obviously I would not criticize his physique. He is in tremendous shape, but I wonder if he doesn't need to drop a few pounds of muscle, because when you look at that swing, when you look at that, just the torque, when you look at just the muscle buildup, it just doesn't lead to the most natural golf swing. And I'm just, after a conversation with my friend, I'm left wondering if he just laid off the weights for a while. If he just slimmed down a bit and got back to a more natural swing with less weight, maybe that would prolong his career.
I think so. And I don't know. I don't know enough about weightlifting and muscle training to speak about this like a clear expert. But it strikes me that a lot of his injuries have been the result of overdoing training. And whether or not you believe it helps his golf swing or doesn't, getting hurt training hurts your golf game because you can't swing like you otherwise would. So if you mean to tell me that Tiger feels he has to have a six-pack and ripped biceps and kind of fashion muscles, that doesn't make any sense to me, because I can look at Phil Mickelson, who is a tub of lard, and he hits a 365 off the tee, and he's 44 years old. So there's no correlation between size, muscle mass, and distance. None. It is all in the action. So for Tiger to spend so much time focusing on weight training and just looking the part of an athlete, maybe that's more trouble than it's worth in terms of injury, in terms of time, focus on his game. But those are things that he can do when he's hurt, which kind of creates this weird cycle of, well, I'm hurt, I can't swing a ball, I'm going to lift more weights. And I just don't, I'm with you. I think if he kind of lost some muscle mass and just committed to being a normal looking person instead of a guy who looks like a model with his shirt off, then maybe there would be a benefit to his golf game.
Talking with Ryan Belangia at golfnewsnet.com. We are recording this on a Tuesday morning, and as of now, we're not sure if Tiger is going to play in the PGA Championship or not, although most would say that the way he was carrying himself, comporting himself on Sunday, it sure as heck doesn't look like that's likely. Although if you check out some of the images from yesterday, I think it was Golf Channel who shared out some of these images of Tiger Woods' caddy, Joe LaCava, on the greens getting yardages. And I don't know if you saw these images, but there was one yesterday. This is by far my favorite image from yesterday, where LaCava was getting some sort of reading from a green, and the sun was setting perfectly so that there is a long shadow behind Joe LaCava that stretched across the green. And I couldn't help but think that that was the specter of Tiger Woods just looming over his caddy as his caddy prepares the yardage book. So you don't have to get into this. There are plenty of people who are speculating, and it doesn't make any sense at this point. But yes, no, does Tiger play this week?
I can't see that he does. He doesn't have his press conference today at 9:30. He's not going to attend the PGA of America Champions dinner that they're having. So he's either in town and just doesn't want to do any of that crap and is using his back injury to get out of it, or he's not going to play. And he's got until Thursday morning to decide. I mean, he's got until his tee time on Thursday to decide whether he's going to play or not. It just doesn't make sense to me for him to do it. I mean, I've heard a good counter argument. It's 1 week. How much worse can you do? If your back's already goofballed and you can get through four rounds and maybe you have a puncher's chance of winning, why not? Why not try it? Because you're not going to make the Ryder Cup team unless you win. You're not going to make the FedEx Cup playoffs unless you win, or even have a chance to make the FedEx Cup playoffs unless you win. So, you know, why not? It's 1 week. The rest of the year's over. And the danger in that is that he did that in 08. It's one more week and I can win. And I did. And I think that was the worst thing to ever happen to Tiger Woods, is to win his last major on one leg. It changed him. It changed our perception of him. And that ultimately, I think, has some place in every decision that he makes, because we all know he can win a major championship as less than wholly human. And so he feels he's kind of got to live up to that.
As a fan, I am totally torn on Tiger's looming decision with the PGA, because on the one hand, golf is infinitely more interesting when he's around. But on the other, I can't continue to watch his rounds of golf just waiting for that car crash. It is wince-inducing television when you just, I have now come to expect him to double over and in pain after a swing. And it really is, it is now very, very stressful watching Tiger Woods play golf. So there is a large part of me that hopes he does the sensible thing and sit this one out. But like you said, you know, how much more damage can he do? So transitioning to the PGA quickly, after Rory McIlroy won the Open Championship, you put out there, and I think a lot of people were starting to talk, you know, how well he hit the ball at Liverpool and how well he hit the ball in Akron this past week. It's got a lot of people talking about the age of McIlroy here. And do you think, and again, this is like when fans of basketball throw up the, you know, is he as good as Michael Jordan comparison? And we don't really want to do that because that's boring and it's been done before. But could we be looking at a couple of years here where Rory McIlroy really is able to pull off 2-3 majors a year?
I think he realizes that this is the window. This is the time to do it. And maybe this is pure speculation, conjecture. Maybe he realized that as he was getting his invitations to send out for his wedding, was that he has a choice in front of him. He can be a married man and a mediocre golfer, or he can be an amazing golfer and a single man. And maybe you're kind of trading off some happiness for more happiness, or the potential for more happiness. But that's kind of the situation.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing you're married, because your Q rating with women just went down exponentially.
And I'm not saying marriage is a bad thing. I'm saying for a super athlete, the window that you have to be super is really small. The window that you have to be married is really large. And assuming you live a full life.
I think you're digging yourself into more trouble.
I understand I am, but McIlroy has between 25 and 32, really, to win the bulk of his major. That's 7 years. 28 majors, just like we were talking about with Tiger. If he can rip off 10, he's in the greatest of all time company. At least we have a conversation. And I think he knows that. And he knows if he dedicates himself to what he can do right now with how athletic he is and how far he hits the ball and how much of an advantage that gives him over the field when he does that thing right, then no wonder he's single. No wonder he's committed to golf more than ever before. The results speak for themselves and reinforce it. So I think he's obviously one of the top guys to look at this week. The only other two guys I would even consider laying money on, and this is for entertainment purposes, would be Sergio Garcia or Jordan Spieth. Maybe Ricky Fowler. I forgot to mention Ricky Fowler. Three guys, other than and Roy McIlroy. That's all I care about. The rest of the field, whatever. They're probably not going to win. So all Rory has to do is beat three guys, and he's beaten them pretty handily in his last several starts. So I think we can get into an era where he wins 1-2 a year, and maybe has a freak year where he wins three. But he needs tournament, major championship venues to be soft or softer than usual. And he's going to get it at Valhalla. It's just the way the course kind of is. He gets it at Augusta every year. And then it's a coin flip of whether or not you're going to get something for the U.S. Open. You probably won't. And for the Open Championship, you might if it rains. So there's probably more chances for him to win the British Open than more U.S. Opens. And he's definitely a guy to look at every year from here on out to win a Masters or a PGA each year. So 1-2 seems not reasonable because that's not many people have done that, but it seems like a decent expectation for a guy who has three major championships now.
I'm glad you mentioned gambling, because part of what I like to do when I get you on the podcast is talk a little bit about odds and who are the favorites and who are the people to put money on. And it has become, the PGA Championship at Valhalla has become Rory's to lose, certainly, but the good bets out there as far as, you know, where you can make your money if gambling were legal. You'd have to probably go somewhere in the, let's say, the 10 to 15 to 20 to 1 range. And a guy right around there who's kind of was sniffing the top of the leaderboard last week who interests me, because I think this guy is thinking Ryder Cup and making sure he qualifies for the Ryder Cup, is a guy like Keegan Bradley.
Yep.
So I wouldn't hesitate to pick against a guy like, to bet on a guy like Keegan Bradley, who I really do think a lot of the reason for his uptick in play recently is because he wants to hopefully not force Captain Tom Watson to waste a captain's pick on him and qualify for the team outright.
Yeah, I think that there's got to be some motivation there. That's why he took the road trip to Glen Eagles and was like the only guy to do it with Tom Watson. And
Jim Furyk was there. Let's give Jim Furyk.
Okay, sure. But Furyk's on the team, and yeah. He doesn't need it. He's gotten beat down enough over the years in the Ryder Cup. But Keegan Bradley hasn't been, and I think he's a total asset to be on this team. So if he can somehow earn enough points to get on the team automatically and hopefully kick Patrick Reed to the curb, then it opens the door for a Phil pick. Opens the door for two other picks, because one's not going to be Tiger. And then you have some options. You have some matchup opportunities if you're Tom Watson, instead of thinking about just the hottest player at that moment. Well, although I think he might go with the hottest player, but you have some options if you're Tom Watson. You're not just kind of backed into a corner, politically speaking, with Tiger, and you're not backed into a corner with picking the guy that's 10th, 11th, 12th, something like that, points, because those guys are duds. So I think Keegan realizes the importance of this week.
I'm glad you mentioned the Ryder Cup, because I like to talk as much Ryder Cup as we can here. And a couple of weeks ago, after Bernhard Langer won the senior British Open in kind of runaway fashion, you and others threw out there the idea of why doesn't Langer play for the European Ryder Cup team this year? I assume it would be an unprecedented move for Paul McGinley to pick a senior tour player, but is it such an outrageous idea to have Bernhard Langer on the European Ryder Cup team this year?
I don't think it is. I think the reaction from people who are like, this is stupid, is because of who isn't on the team automatically right now. Graham McDowell, Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, guys who have just obliterated the U.S. in Ryder Cup matches over the years. And I understand their point. But to be honest, I'm pretty well expecting the Europeans to destroy us anyway. So what's the difference between putting a 50-some-odd old man who can still putt lights out on the team versus Ian Poulter, who hasn't done anything all season. What does it matter? And I don't think it does. I think it'd be a pretty cool precedent to set. But the argument from people that Langer couldn't keep his tour card if he played the PGA Tour, that he's not among the 12 best players in Europe right now, fine. Those all, could all be true, but that's not the metric. That's not the rubric. It is, can you earn points for your team in any of five sessions? And only one of those where you do not have a partner. So I'm pretty sure Langer can contribute birdies in alternate shot and four balls, and maybe it's a little bit of a gamble to put him up against anybody on the U.S. side because they're way longer than him on in Sunday matches. But he is a total asset in a team format. I mean, put him with Martin Keimer. How cool would that be? I'd be all for that. I'm not going to root for the Europeans, but I would be fascinated to see it happen.
Yeah, here's the other thing. Taking it a step further, and I don't know if you mentioned this after the Greenbrier or not, but Tom Watson played at the Greenbrier, and he acquitted himself quite well for a 63, 64-year-old man. He's 63, 64, right around
yeah.
there. Would you rather, at Glen Eagles, if you're rooting for the American side in the Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles, would you rather have a guy like Brendan Todd and Ryan Moore or Tom Watson? Fair question.
Ryan Moore has a good record at match play, and that's the only reason I even think about it. But I mean, why the hell not? Why can't Tom Watson play?
Right. Here's the point I'm trying to get to. There should be a spot reserved for a senior tour player at the Ryder Cup. And I don't think that there would be a significant drop-off in quality of play because, look, we just mentioned two guys on the senior circuit, Langer and Watson, who – frankly, they may hold their own against any of the best tour pros on the junior circuit. So why not reserve a spot for a senior tour player at the Ryder Cup? Wouldn't that be interesting to have you know the captain Paul McGinley trying to choose between a Colin Montgomery who's played well this summer and a Langer?
I think it'd be a fascinating experiment. I don't know they would do it very long. There's also not a year every year where you have a guy playing as well. We stopped playing well. Age, even Tom Watson age. I think that when you have a situation like this, you have a guy who's 50 plus who doesn't play the big tours, the young guy tours regularly, and is still playing some kick ass golf. It doesn't matter they're playing against 50 somethings as their opponents. They're still killing golf courses. So if that's the case, I don't think that there's any reason why that shouldn't be a consideration for a Ryder Cup pick, American or European.
Yeah, I just think I know the Ryder Cup doesn't need to increase interest because we're all, as golf fans, interested in the Ryder Cup. I just think it's one of those things that would be fun to consider because the point is, as you mentioned, that the drop-off in play is not so significant where you'd notice it. And it would harken back to the old days. I think the nostalgia factor would drive other eyeballs to the television screens. You know, the older generation of golf fans who grew up watching guys like Langer and Watson would make sure to tune in this September because, you know, those guys are a significant part of the festivities. Okay, I can't let you go here without first weighing in on what's gone down with Dustin Johnson. And I know you've talked about this and you've had spirited back and forths with people on social media, but how, when you think about the PGA Tour's, not their suspension policy, but the policy that they have where they do not need to disclose the reason for the suspension, are you of the mind that this policy actually leads to heightened suspicion rather than diffusing some of the potential scuttlebutt that could follow?
I think this and the VJ lawsuit lead to more speculation because VJ asked New York State Supreme Court to give him access to the records, drug testing records of Dustin Johnson. Turns out he was right. VJ knew Dustin had probably tested positive. If not, he knew outright he had tested positive. So the court denied it because it doesn't fall in the scope of what they believe VJ's gripe is. But now I'm starting to believe VJ's more right than ever. that he knows and his peers know who's tested positive, who got an involuntary vacation, or who was suspended for recreational / drugs of abuse use, and we were never told about it. And I think players find the joke. If you're going to have a drug policy and you want to enforce it, you can't just make people go away and not mention it. And then when we all kind of go, hey, someone's been around for 90-ish days or 180-ish days. I wonder where they went. And the law was suspended. Well, okay, maybe he wasn't suspended, but maybe it was semantically a suspension because you told him he's going to be suspended and we're going to tell people unless you just play for 90 days, which is their option under the drug policy. And that strikes me as really disingenuous, and it leads me to believe that the only reason this thing exists is not because Tiger said at some WGC event, okay, fine, test me, I will be testing, but that they did it because they wanted to get in the Olympics. And if they don't follow WADA's rules, they don't have mirrors, WADA's banned subs list, and test to look for those things, not getting in the Olympics. So that's why this policy exists. That's the only reason why it exists, because otherwise the PGA Tour wouldn't care. Because no one cared before Tiger said anything, and no one cares now. I don't think anyone really cares that Dustin Johnson is snorting cocaine if he is. That's his full decision to screw up his career. But because the PGA Tour has made it their business to press everybody as to whether or not he suspended, enforced rehab, or none of the above, it makes it an issue. So I think it does make people more suspicious because the tour is trying to protect its own image of its players more than the players themselves with its policy.
Yeah, no question about it. The secrecy of the policy does lead to more speculation, and it leads to more talking, and you know, now we're all left to read stories from golf.com and other outlets about how, you know, this is the second time that Dustin Johnson tested positive for cocaine, and you know, why the PGA Tour wouldn't take the approach of getting out in front of these news stories rather than kind of trailing behind. If it's all in the interest of protecting the integrity of the player and that player's privacy, you're in effect actually making it harder for that player. And I understand that both the PGA Tour and Dustin Johnson are going to keep their no comment. You know, it's just a time away from the tour type stance, but it's really not helping kind of protect his image and the image of the tour by not coming out and being a bit more honest early rather than late. And it's also enormously disingenuous if you think about it. I mean, does the PGA Tour really think that we're just going to accept a statement that they issue in conjunction with Dustin Johnson and we're not going to peruse the endless annals of the internet for more information? And when we do start to look at what we find. We find reputable journalists reporting on Dustin Johnson's positive cocaine test, and we find all these other stories about Dustin Johnson sleeping around with, you know, tour wives and all of these stories. That does not help the PGA Tour's brand. So if the PGA Tour is really trying to protect itself, it should be much more upfront with its reporting policies, and we're still going to search the internet. We're still going to try to find all the salacious details, but it just, the PGA Tour almost, it's almost looking down on the fans. You know, it's almost as if they're treating us like we don't need to know, nor would we understand the severity of what's going on. And I do, as I mentioned earlier, I do find that policy disingenuous. It's a little insulting.
It is. It really is. And I guess they just don't see it that way. I don't know how they don't see it that way, but they don't see it that way. And what sparked Robert Lucetich's tweet about Dustin Johnson sleeping with tour wives and then Allie McKenzie's related response was he went searching for other information they could talk about Dustin Johnson because the tour tried to shut down discussion about a human being's potential to have. That's what they did. That's what they did. They wasn't sending. Oh, no, he doesn't have a drug problem. He's just taking a leave of absence here. Okay, well, let's go look and see who he's had sex. And all of a sudden, Dustin Johnson is a much different looking guy, to the public at least, than he was a week and a half ago. And that is different because of the tour's drug policy and the way that they feel they should handle announcing or not disciplinary action for that program. That's
right.
The truth of it.
All of this could have been avoided if the PGA Tour were just a bit more honest about it. And, you know, I don't know if the PGA Tour wants to take a page from the NFL's disciplinary policy, but I mean, the NFL at least states the reasons why players are being suspended, and we could take umbrage for the length of these suspensions, certainly, but they do at least disclose officially why a player is suspended. And you're right. I mean, this does impact Dustin Johnson's image, and it affects the PGA Tour's image. And to be honest with you, the next time a player goes away with a injury, the next time, we're all going to be left scratching our heads wondering and going to the keyboards and doing a little Google search to see if perhaps they were sleeping around with players' wives.
Yeah, think about the difference between Ray Rice's suspension, 2 games, pitiful, for hitting his wife, or now wife, knocking her out on camera, and the NFL's drug suspension policy. It's very clearly laid out, the drug suspension policy. Or season ban. Okay? Then what's the policy on domestic abuse? We don't have one. And it's when it's not clear, when there's not precedent, when it's not so obvious what's going to happen, that this kind of thing. That's what the PGA Tour needs to realize.
Yeah, and the NFL, if they're looking to establish precedent as far as domestic abuse and domestic violence goes, they've failed miserably. So let's separate the NFL from the PGA Tour slightly here. All right, Ryan Blangy, GolfNewsNet.com. Thanks for taking the time to chat about a little golf in advance of the PGA Championship this week, and we'll wait and see with bated breath as we hear from Tiger Woods in his camp.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, John.
Yep, thanks.